Well, good morning, Buckhead Church. How are y'all feeling this morning? Okay, all seven of you are doing well. That's awesome. Let's try that again. Buckhead Church, how are you feeling this morning? Good, good, good. Hey, can y'all give it up for these guys for helping me get this ridiculous prop out for my talk? Isn't that amazing? Thanks so much. Well, if we haven't had a chance to meet, my name is Gerald Fadiomi. Like Bo said, I have the privilege of working up at Brownsbridge Church. But I love Buckhead, love being a part of what's happening here. It's been a little bit since I've been here, been about 2 years. So for those of you who are new, or for those of you who I haven't had a chance to meet, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. Like I said, my name is Gerald, which I think is a little bit of a unique name. Not really just because of the name itself, really more because of the family that I grew up in. My dad is from Nigeria. His name is Oluwafemi. My mom is Liberian. Her name is Ekwa. Somehow the two came together and had a kid by the name of Gerald, which I have no idea how that happened. It's like the whitest name of all time, but here I am. And I'm just really glad that they named me Gerald because they couldn't name me something real weird, like, I don't know, Mufasa, and that would be real interesting. Second thing you should know about me is about a year and a half ago, I got married to the woman of my dreams. This is a picture of us on our wedding day. That's Bae right there. Yeah, some of y'all are thinking right now, how did you pull that off? I pray a lot. But yeah, that's what we looked like on our wedding day. That's not what we look like normally. Usually we look more like this. We're a bunch of goofballs. We love hanging out. That's us in Chicago where she's from. And so I love getting to do life with her. And then I love getting to lead the high school students up at Brownsbridge Church. So just about 35 minutes north of here, I get a chance to invest in the high school students up there. And I'm super excited again to be with y'all today because this place has a special place in my heart. If you were here last week, Jamie Dickens, my good friend, kicked off the series Filters, and he started off by talking about our God filter. He talked about what we see when we see God, or the question that he asks is, what do you think about when you think about God? Because what you think about when you think about God is a really big deal, and it affects the way that you interact with God. And so he ended the message by saying, hey, what would it look like for our God filter to be that we would see God as a father? What would it look like for us to believe that God loves us, that he is with us, and that he is for us? And if you haven't had a chance to hear that message, you got to go back and watch it. It was phenomenal. And I am so excited to continue this idea of filters. And the way that I want to do that is by talking about a filter that I think is common to each and every one of us in the room. So this morning, what I want to talk about is the performance filter. I want to talk about the performance filter. And the reason that I want to talk about this filter in particular is because I believe that this filter is one that all of us in the room have in common. And the reason that I think that's the case is just because of the culture that we live in. Like, living here in the United States of America, we live in what I like to call a performance culture or a performance-based culture. And what I mean by that is simply this, is that we live in a culture that says you get what you deserve. Like, what you put in is what you get out. I remember growing up, there was this Gatorade commercial that I absolutely loved. This little kid would come out on the screen at the beginning and he'd start singing this song. He'd go, I know I can be what I wanna be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. And then the whole kid choir would come out at the end of the commercial. They'd all be singing, I know I can. Right? It was amazing. And I love that commercial so much. The song still sticks with me today. But what I think is interesting about that song is it truly is a reflection of our culture, right? That we believe that you can be whoever you want to be as long as you put in the work to get where you want to go. I know I can be what I want to be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I want to be. It's the performance culture. You get what you deserve. And we see this in all areas of life. Let me show you what I mean by that. Just bear with me for a second. When pastors wear worship leader jeans, it takes a little time to get. Okay, all right. Cool, we made it. Right, like we see this in all areas of our life. If you're a college student in the room, this is the way that it works for you, right? Like, if you actually decide to wake up and go to classes, then you understand the content a little bit better. And if you understand the content, then naturally you get better grades. And when you get better grades, you have a higher GPA. And when you have a high enough GPA, you keep hope and your parents still love you, right? Like, that's the way that it works. You get what you deserve. What you put into school is what you are going to get out of school. That's not just true for college, though. That's true professionally, right? Like, for all of us in the room who work full-time, you know that this is true, right? Like, if you show up to work and you do a great job, hopefully you'll get a raise. And after you get a raise, if you continue to do a good job, you'll get a promotion and you'll get to lead a team. And if you do a good job leading that team, then maybe you'll get to lead a department. And if you do a good job leading that department, then you may get to manage a whole division and you become the boss. You get what you deserve. What you put in is what you get out. It's a performance-based culture. And because we live in a performance culture, we often see life with this performance filter. It's the reason that when you work really hard at something and you don't get the payoff that you were hoping for, you get really frustrated. It's the reason that when you hear stories of people who have worked really hard to get somewhere that they want to be, but they don't end up there, we get really annoyed. It's the reason that we get sad in movies when people don't end up places that we think they should go. We live in a performance culture that says you get what you deserve. It's true about school, it's true about work, but this even bleeds over into relationships. Like, husbands in the room, can we be honest for a second, right? Like, you decide you're going to leave work early one day. And you get home and you realize that the dishes have not been done. So you decide, you know what? I'm gonna be a good husband and I'm gonna do the dishes today. And then after you finish the dishes, you look around and you notice that you have socks all over the house that have not made it into the hamper. This is a real life struggle between me and my wife. So babe, if you're watching, I'm so sorry. But you realize that the socks are all over the house. And so you go, you know what? I'm gonna take these and I'm gonna put them in the hamper where they are supposed to go. And then when you finish doing that, you realize, oh my gosh, dinner has not been made yet. My wife's not home yet. I'm gonna go ahead and start making dinner before she gets there. And so you make dinner and she walks in the house and husbands, you know, right? Like, you have that look on your face, like, yeah, I did a good job, didn't I? Come on, go ahead, compliment me. Compliment me for the thing that you do all the time that I did one time and I deserve praise for. Go ahead, come on, compliment me now, right? And you're looking at her with that smile on your face, and she's like, oh my gosh, babe, thanks so much. You came home early and you did all of this. Like, I really appreciate it. And you're like, yes, this is the moment. This is where I make the ask. And you look at her with those loving eyes and you go, you know, babe, I came home early and, you know, I did all the dishes. Did you notice my socks? In the hamper, girl, I'm killing it, right? Not only that, but I went ahead and started some dinner for us. So, you know, I was thinking that maybe, you know, I could go golfing with my boys this Saturday, right? Some of y'all thought I was going somewhere else. You need to get your mind out the gutter, right? But that's the way that it works. The performance filter even translates into our relationships. You get what you deserve. What you put in is what you get out. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, right? Like, if you have dreams and you have aspirations and you have goals, you have places that you want to go and things that you want to accomplish, I think in those cases that the performance filter might actually be a good thing, that we should work hard for the things that we want to accomplish in life. And so this filter in and of itself isn't bad, but the problem with the performance filter is that it's really easy for us to apply this filter to other areas of our life where it can become extremely dangerous. You see, our culture kind of has a performance addiction, and so we start to see everything through a performance filter, and when we do that, it can be really, really dangerous, especially in the area of faith, especially as it relates to having a relationship with God, because we see the world through this performance filter. It's really easy to start believing that our performance dictates our relationship with God, that our good performance gets us right standing with God, that the better people we are, the more God will love us, right? Like, we start to believe, like, hey, if I don't use cuss words when somebody cuts me off in Atlanta traffic, then God will love me a little more. And if I show up to Buckhead every week for a month, perfect attendance, gold star, God will love me even more. If I muster up the courage to go to small group when I really don't feel like going this week, man, God's really gonna be happy with me now. And we start to believe that our good performance puts us at right standing with God. We apply this performance filter to our relationship with God. Here's the problem with this, though, is that somewhere along the way, from down there to up here, we mess up, right? Like, we never actually get all the way up here. Somewhere between down there and up here, we fail. Somewhere between down there and up here, we miss the mark. And so what actually happens is that when we look at a relationship with God with a performance filter, one of three things are bound to happen. Either A, you find yourself feeling exhausted. Because you have set a standard that you think you should be living up to, and so you try and try your best to get as high up here as you possibly can, but then you mess up and you feel like you're all the way back down there, and you find yourself in this never-ending cycle of I'm trying to be perfect, I'm trying to be perfect, I'm trying to be perfect, I messed up, now I'm down here, I'm trying to be perfect, I'm trying to be perfect, I'm trying to be perfect, I messed up, now I'm back down here, and it feels like you're taking one step forward and two steps back. And for some of us as Christians in the room, you find yourself feeling exhausted and you're wondering if this whole thing is even worth it. You just want to give up because you're just tired of trying to be something you can't be. You find yourself feeling exhausted. For others of us, maybe we don't feel exhausted, but if we were to be completely honest about where we are, we've become a little bit judgmental, right? And we know that we're not all the way up here, but we're definitely not down there. And so we, because we've elevated ourselves some, we look down on the people around us. And God, I can't believe you still talk like that. I can't believe you still go to those places. I can't believe you still dress like that. I can't believe you act the way that you act. Oh my goodness. And you start looking down on the people around you because you've elevated yourself just a little bit. You find yourself isolated. You find yourself with people who are frustrated with you, who don't even really want to be around you because they can feel the judgment as soon as they walk in the room. When we see a relationship with God through a performance filter, man, it's really easy to look around us and judge the people on our right and on our left, isn't it? Or maybe you're in the room this morning and you feel the way that I felt 7 years ago when I walked into this church for the very first time, having no idea who Jesus was and having thrown my life into the trash can, sitting in that very back corner, like maybe you're in here this morning and you're feeling like, man, I'm excluded. I'm on the outs. There's no way that I could even be a part of this Christian thing that y'all are talking about. There's no way that I could have a good relationship with God because I've already messed up way too much. And maybe you walked in here this morning terrified to even step into church because you felt like all of your poor performance and all of your bad decisions and all of your sin was plastered on your forehead and everyone was judging you when you walked through the doors. And you feel like you're down here and you could never get here. So there's no point in even trying. See, here's the thing. I don't know what category you might find yourself in this morning, but can I just let you in on a secret? This isn't God's desire for you. This is not God's design for you and me. God's hope is not that you would try so hard to follow him that you would find yourself feeling exhausted to the point of wanting to give up. That's not what God's desire is for you. God's desire for you is not that you would elevate yourself to a place where you judge other people so much so that you find yourself isolated and alone and no one wants to be around you. That's not God's desire for you. God's desire for you is not that you would count yourself out because of some mistakes that you've made and because of some failure in your past. That is not God's desire for you. So here's the good news for all of us in the room this morning. So there's a different filter that we can use to look at a relationship with God. There's a different filter that we can put on as it relates to following Jesus. There is a different filter that we can look at as it relates to following God with our lives. There's a new filter. There's a different way to see. And so I want to introduce you to this filter this morning because y'all, I think if we could start to see our relationship with God through this filter, man, it would change our perspective. I think if we could start to see our relationship with God through this filter, it would make Christianity far more appealing and far more accessible. I think if we could start to see a relationship with God through this filter, it would be a game changer for us. In fact, I think it would change everything. So I want to introduce you to this new filter, but in order to do that, I first need to introduce you to a person. So the person I want to introduce you to this morning is Paul. Now, if you've grown up in church, or you've been around churches, you've probably heard of the Apostle Paul before. Paul is known for writing 13 letters in our New Testament, and most of those letters were written to churches that he had planted all around the Mediterranean rim. His letters make up over half of the New Testament. Paul was a really big deal and is a really big deal in the Christian faith. Paul was a go-getter. He was a hustler. Like if Paul had taken the Enneagram, I would bet that Paul would be a 3, right? Like he was an achiever and he just got after it. Now, I don't know for a fact that that's true, but I'm a 3, so I like to believe that Paul just got after it, right? But as much as an achiever as Paul was, Paul also had a past. You see, Paul used to be known as Saul. And Saul, man, I'm telling you, Saul better than anyone understood the performance filter. Like better than anyone, Saul understood this idea of performing your way into right standing with God. And the reason that I know this is true is because of one of the letters that Paul wrote. See, in the letter that Paul wrote to the church in Philippi, we call it Philippians, he describes the way that he would have seen himself in his former life when he was Saul. It's Philippians chapter 3. I want to show you what he would say. He said this. He said, if someone else thinks that they have reason to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. What's Paul saying? He's going, hey, if someone else thinks that their performance has elevated them to a place that they now have right standing with God, let me just tell you, they have nothing on me. Like if someone else thinks that their good behavior and their good performance has gotten them somewhere, bro, I am killing them. Like you have no idea how much better I am than them. And then he goes on to say why. This is crazy. He says, I was circumcised on the eighth day, which in our context is a little bit weird of a thing to be bragging about, but whatever, Paul, that's what you're into. He's of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews. And in regard to the law, in regard to keeping the commands, in regard to living up to the standard that God would want us to, man, I was a Pharisee, meaning I was a teacher of it. I got it better than anyone else. And if you want to question my ambition, you want to question my effort? You want to question my zeal? He goes, as for zeal, I persecuted the church. I was so about this that I wanted to make sure everyone got this right, and I would go to any lengths to make sure that that happened. And as for righteousness based on the law, as for following the rules, as for good performance, it was faultless. Paul would say, man, my performance is through the roof. You couldn't even compare me to someone else. Now, a lot of the credentials that Paul is listing off in our context don't really seem like that big of a deal, but what Paul was basically saying to this Gentile audience is that as far as being a Jew, he was as good as they came. He was a pure Jewish pedigree. That he was the best of the best when it came to being a Jew. But not only that, man, Paul had upper class social status. When he walked into a room, people knew who he was. He was from the tribe of Benjamin. He was a huge deal. But not only did they know who Paul was because of his family and because of the family that he grew up in, the reason that they knew who Paul was because of his performance. He was a Pharisee. I mean, he knew the law better than anyone else, and he followed it to the T. His performance would have been known all throughout the region. Paul was a big deal, and if that wasn't enough, he would go on to say, man, my moral life was blameless. As far as morality, as far as practicing the law and living up to God's standard, I was as good as they could come. Paul is going, if we are judging on the basis of performance, I'm as good as it gets. I'm here. Most people, down there. I've run into some people who feel like that. I've run into some Christians with that mentality. Maybe you have too. If I was being completely honest, there was a season in my life where I was a Christian with that mentality, where I left some of the former things of my life and I started living in a different way and I started thinking, man, I'm killing it right now and I'm better than everyone else around me. And I don't know where that sits with you, but what Paul says next blows my mind. What Paul says next absolutely makes no sense at all. Like for Paul to list out this pedigree of who he was and all that he'd accomplished and his perfect performance, for him to say what he says next doesn't make any sense. Look at what he says in Philippians 3:7. He says, but whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss. Wait, Paul, what? Loss? Wait, that whole list of accomplishments, that family that you grew up in, perfect Jew, That upper class status that you have, really, that doesn't matter to you anymore? Your perfect performance, keeping the law, knowing the law, teaching the law, and holding other people accountable to it, that doesn't matter to you anymore, Paul? How? How is it that all of these things that you have accomplished seem to not matter anymore? How is it that all of the good that you have done to prove your worth to God and to get in right standing with him do not matter to you? And Paul, what are you talking about? Why would you say that? Well, he goes on to tell us why. He says, for whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. Jesus? Wait, Paul, you met Jesus and now all of your performance doesn't matter to you anymore? to another translation of the Bible called The Message. I absolutely love it. Because what it does is it takes the scriptures and it puts them in the layman's terms in the language that we would use today. And I love the way that it translates what Paul is saying in this moment. He's essentially saying this. He's saying, hey, the very credentials that these people are waving around as something special, I'm tearing them up and throwing it out with the trash, along with everything else that I used to take credit for. And why? Because of Jesus. Paul would say he had an encounter with Jesus that changed everything for him. That he had an interaction with Jesus that made him look at everything differently. Paul would say that when he ran into Jesus, the way that he saw the world completely changed. The way that he saw his life completely changed. When Paul ran into Jesus, watch this, his filter changed. And he started seeing everything differently. So the question then is this, what happened? Like what happened when Paul bumped into Jesus? What happened that turned Saul, the hater of Christians, into the Apostle Paul, the writer of the 13 letters that we read often in our Bibles? What happened that made Saul go from being addicted to his performance and boasting about who he was to all of that meaning nothing to him? What happened when Paul met Jesus? I'll tell you what happened. So Paul ran into this word right here. He ran into grace. Paul ran into the grace of God. You see, if you notice in his letter to the church in Philippi, Paul said that for his zeal, he persecuted the church. When Paul was Saul, he made it his mission to put an end to the movement of Christianity. Being a Pharisee, he knew the law so well, and he felt like anyone who was following Jesus was watering down the Jewish faith. Not only that, but they were leading people astray. And so he went and got permission to persecute anyone who was following what they called at the time the way. Anyone who was following Jesus, he wanted to have them arrested, thrown into jail, and persecuted for ruining the Jewish faith. He made that his mission in life. So he gets the letters and he's on the way to the city called Damascus to fulfill his plan, to work out his mission. And on the way, he bumps head into Jesus, resurrected Jesus. Jesus had come back from the grave and he sees this bright light and falls down to his knees and has a conversation with Jesus where Jesus looks at Paul and he goes, why are you persecuting me, Saul? Saul, why are you against me? Why are you trying to destroy the thing that God is building because of me? Paul, why are you against me? And y'all, in this interaction, Saul actually loses his sight. He goes blind. And his buddies pick him up and take him to this house. And I would imagine that in this moment, Saul realizes that everything that he was doing, all of his performance, all of the things that he were working towards were actually in the wrong direction. That he was in the wrong the whole time. And so he's at this house completely blind, not being able to see, just having this incredible interaction with Jesus. And then this guy sent by God named Ananias shows up at the house and he essentially says to Saul, hey, God's given you a second chance. God's given you an opportunity at a new life. Here's what's crazy, is Saul did nothing to deserve that. He was in the middle of doing wrong. He was about to go and persecute more Christians, and Ananias shows up and goes, God has given you a second chance, even though you don't earn it, even though you haven't deserved it. The scales fall right off of Saul's eyes. And I like to imagine that as his performance filter falls off, and now he sees everything differently. And now he starts to see life through a new set of eyes. He starts to see everything through the filter of grace and changes the way he sees people. It changes the way he sees himself, but bigger than any of that, it changes the way that he sees a relationship with God. Grace was the thing that changed everything for Saul. It's the reason he became Paul. Grace was the thing that rocked his world. Grace was the prescription to his performance addiction, and I think the same is true for us as well. That grace really could be the thing that changes everything. That grace is the prescription to our performance addiction. Grace is the thing that makes us realize that we don't have to work so hard to get from down there to up here. Grace is the thing that takes you from exhausted and tired of trying to encourage at how far God has brought you so far. Grace is the thing that takes you from judgmental and looking down on the people around you to grateful that God has even put you in the position that you're in. Grace is the thing that takes you from being on the outs and feeling like there's nothing that you can do to get right standing with God to included and part of the family of God. Grace is the thing that changes everything. But the problem with grace is this. It's that as often as we hear about it, as important as it is, it's really difficult to define. In fact, I remember when I first became a Christian here at Buckhead, I kept hearing people talk about this grace thing. I kept hearing Christians just throw around this word grace, and I was like, I have no idea what this means. I mean, I know a girl named Grace, and she's amazing, but that's as far as it goes. Some of y'all will get that joke later. And so I went to my mentor, and I said, hey, Wes, all these Christians keep talking about grace. I don't understand what it is. What is this grace thing? And he looked at me, and he goes, Gerald, grace is really difficult to define, but here's my best definition. Because, Gerald, grace is getting what you don't deserve. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. In a world that says you get what you deserve, grace says the opposite. And y'all, that's what Paul experienced. He got something he didn't deserve in the middle of his wrongdoing, in the middle of his hating the church, in the middle of his persecuting the church, in the middle of his poor performance, Jesus shows up and goes, you get a second chance at life. So get back in the game. And Paul experiences the grace of God. I think that's the reason that Paul describes grace the way that he does in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. He says this, he says, for it is by grace that you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourself. It is the gift of God, not by works that no one can boast. What is Paul saying? It's not your performance that gets you right standing with God. It's God's grace that gets you right standing. It's not your performance that makes God love you. It's God's grace is the reason that he loves you. It's not your performance that gives you God's approval and makes you a part of the family. It is God's grace that did that. And that's a gift, Paul would say. I don't know if you've ever gotten a great gift. I'll tell you the best gift I ever got when I was 6 years old. And in my house, we had this rule that on Christmas morning, you weren't allowed to come downstairs until my mom said so. Because I'd wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning looking for Santa, like, Santa, where are you? She's like, get upstairs. So she made this rule, don't come downstairs until I tell you to. Christmas morning, 6 years old, hear knocking at the door. Santa, is that you? No, it wasn't him. Door opens and I hear this thick African accent from downstairs say, Jedi, bring your boots downstairs. I have a gift that I want to give to you. It's my dad. And so I come running down the stairs, my pajamas, all excited for Christmas. He says, come, my son, sit in your daddy's lap. I have something for you. He picks up this box and he sits it in my lap, perfectly wrapped. And I start ripping that thing open. And I get inside, and in it, y'all, is the greatest gift that any human could ever receive. It is a Super Nintendo fully equipped with Duck Hunt, orange gun, and everything. And I look at the gift. I look back at my dad. I look at the gift. I look back at him. He says, Gerard, in my country, when you turn 6 years old, we take you outside, you kill animal, you bring it back inside, you feed the whole village. In this country, you cannot kill anything. So you take the gun, you shoot the birds, you have a good time. And y'all, I shot those birds like crazy. I love that gift. You know what's crazy about that gift, though? Was that at 6 years old, there was nothing I could do to earn the gift. At 6 years old, there was nothing that I could do to deserve the gift. At 6 years old, the only thing that I could do was receive the gift that my dad was giving me for free. That's grace. It's a gift from your heavenly Father that he has offered you for free. And you can't earn it. You don't deserve it. You just get to receive it. I know it sounds too easy, but that's what makes it so amazing. And if you want the clearest picture of grace, if you're still wrestling with the idea, let me just make it really clear for you. This is what Paul writes to the church in Rome. Romans 5:8, he says that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. What is he saying? That God sent his son Jesus from heaven down to the planet earth to put on human flesh, to experience life the way you and I experienced it, but to never sin, to never fall short, to never miss the mark, to live the perfect life that none of us could live, and have the perfect performance that none of us are capable of. And in return, he'd be betrayed by his own friend. He would be spit on and beaten within inches of his life. He would have a crown of thorns put on his head, and he would mock as he suffocated on a cross for hours. And then he would go to a grave. He would stay there for 3 days. But on the third day, he would jump out of that grave victorious and say, anyone who puts their faith in me now has an opportunity at eternal life, not because of your good performance, but because of what I've done for you and you and you. It's a gift we can't earn, that we don't deserve, but that we get to receive for free. Excuse my skinny jeans. So what do we do? What do we do with that? Like, if that's what's on the table for all of us, what do we do with that? Well, I'll tell you what we do. We do the same thing that Paul did. We embrace grace. We embrace the grace of God. That's what we do. We accept the gift that's been freely offered to us. And we stop trying to perform our way into God's good graces, and we accept what he has done for us. So if you're in the room this morning and you are feeling exhausted, and you've been trying with everything that you have to live up to a standard, you've been trying to be this perfect person, can I just say to you the same thing that I think God wants to say to you through the Apostle Paul, that he would reach through the centuries and grab you and say, listen to me, for it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. It is by grace that you have been saved through faith. You can't earn it. So quit trying to earn God's love when he's given it to you for free. Quit trying to earn God's acceptance when he has given it to you freely. Quit trying to earn forgiveness for God when he has already forgiven you by the nails put through his son's hands on the cross. Quit trying to earn God's approval when he has already marked you approved. This Christian faith is not about your perfection or your performance. It's about God's grace. So would you embrace that this morning? Would you find yourself encouraged rather than exhausted? And for those of you in the room who, if you were honest, you've become a little bit judgmental, you've started to look down on the people around you, can I just say to you what I think God wants to say to you through the Apostle Paul, that he would reach through the centuries and grab you and say, for it is by grace that you have been saved through faith, and this is not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. It's not from you. You didn't have to earn God's love. You didn't have to earn God's acceptance. You didn't have to earn God's forgiveness or approval. So why are you making other people earn it from you? Come on, you didn't have to earn God's love. So why did they have to earn yours? Come on, how long will we continue to do this? How will the world know that there is a God whose love they don't have to earn when they keep having to earn ours as Christians? So would you this morning do what the Apostle Paul did? The person who had the right to look down on someone else more than any of us, would you do what he did and embrace the grace of God and then repackage that gift and give it to the people around you? Because there's a world that's waiting to know that there's a God that loves them. And God's sending us to be the people to tell them. If you're in the room this morning, and you would say you feel excluded, you feel like you're on the outs because of your decisions, because of your poor performance, because of your failure and your mistakes and your regret. Can I just say to you what God wants to say to you through the Apostle Paul, that he would reach through the centuries and grab you by your shirt and say, look at me, look at me. For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And this is not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. Hear me, not by works, so that no one can boast. Hey, we're all on the same page. None of us are perfect. None of our performance is good enough. Your effort does not earn you God's love. And your performance, your poor performance, doesn't disqualify you. So stop running from God and start embracing His grace. That's what's on the table for each and every one of us this morning. The gift of God, the grace of God. So what if we decided today to do what Paul did, to take our performance filter off and toss it into the trash and put on the filter of grace? I think it could change everything for you. I think it could change everything for me.